the stars, the shows. Entertainment in New York is Joan Hamburg, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
The world of entertainment has been hit really hard this past year, with some of the greatest stars and legends passing away. Mary Tyler Moore, you know, it didn't come as a great shock, but it came as a great shock because Mary Tyler Moore was part of so many people's lives. I've heard from Katie Corrigan, who said, "She changed my life." You hear that all the time from her contemporaries, from those who grew up watching her, from the show that was all of our favorites. Who could resist that show? I want you to meet Susan Silver. Susan was very unusual, too, because she was one of the original writers of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, the Bob Newhart Show, Maude, a lot of the great sitcoms of our time. She wrote movies of the week, plots for her own sitcoms, and, of course, worked with Mary. And when Mary got that job, she probably had no clue that the Mary Tyler Moore Show was going to change her life forever and the life of so many people. And it changed your life too, Susan Silver.
It sure did. What a pleasure to be with you. I wish you were on a happier occasion, but I'm honored to be here, Joan.
I thank you. So you, who started at the beginning, how did your career take off like that too? It wasn't that there were women writers coming out of the woodwork.
There were very few. I mean, I think Madeline Davis on Lucille Ball was one of the few, and Joanna Lee. But I had done casting on Rowan and Martin Laughlin, and I really wanted to be a writer, but they didn't want women to be writers because they wanted to be in their own apartment in their underwear, they said, and we couldn't have women there. So I had a partner, and we had written A Love American Style, and Gary Marshall, the late great, also just lost, was our manager. And I said to him, I just saw this show, Mary Tyler Moore, and I can do this. I had never written a script on my own. My partner retired to have a baby and went on to write Beaches, by the way.
Oh, my gosh.
Brainerd Art. Yeah. And so I said, Gary, get me in there. I can do this because I grew up in Milwaukee, which is like Minneapolis. I know
right.
this.
You know that background.
And he got me in there, and they said, if we get picked up, they only had gotten a mid-season pickup. They said, if we get picked up for a full season, you're going to be the first one, and I was.
Did you have to write a sample script for them?
No. That was what was so amazing.
How did they even know you could do it?
Because I never had done it by myself. I think because Gary vouched for me, and he said he'd back me up. And I came in, Joan, at the time, where I was so naive, you know, I didn't know any other women writers, I thought you couldn't make things up, that you only had to do it from your own life. So I came in with six stories from my own life, and they thought I was a genius, not because I was, but they'd never heard women's stories before.
Right, that's
funny. Things that women all relate to. Like, my first story was, you know, every woman's had to stand up for a wedding for someone they didn't care about, and they put them in a terrible dress. And
right.
That was my first show, and so I did five after that, and it's because they wanted women, and then they sought out women, and by the end, I think they had hired 25.
Wow. And, of course, it was a novelty at that time to, not only from your point of view, but for an audience. We never saw independent single-career women, you know, on TV.
Well, you know, Marlo had started it. I want to give her some credit.
Right.
That Girl was on, and I'll tell you, interestingly enough, Iris and I had gone to pitch a That Girl, which we sold, and Marlo was the head executive there, and we did a show about her getting engaged, and they never shot it because she decided, you know what, I want to stay single. It's important to be a single career woman, so I want to give her some credit. But with Mary, we came at the right time. Feminism was really roaring, and without being political and making it a mandate, we just tried to be real women living our lives and showing other people what we were doing.
And didn't you ultimately write for New York Social Diary, The Search for Mr. Adequate, so much for being single?
Oh, my God. I had a column for 4 years called The Search for Mr. Adequate because there is no prince, Joan. And after 35... And
a lot of frogs.
Yeah. And after 50, I say, in between 50 and death, there really is. So you have to find someone who's more than adequate, and you make him into the one. I had my adequacy scale, you know, zero, less than adequate, adequate, more than adequate.
Right. So did you ever find a Mr. Adequate?
You know what's so sad? I haven't found one, and I hope that this will bring me one, because I've just written my memoir, and it's called Hot Pants in Hollywood, because I actually wore hot pants. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
Wait, you have to tell people who may not know. Like, we have young producers here who are looking at you like, what are hot pants? Do you mean you're hot for guys?
Oh, no, no. I wore these shorts. It was an outfit that you have to Google it, young people. And TV Guy did an article that said the writer wore hot pants. I actually wore them to meetings. It was like a
short
shorts underneath and stockings and boots. I do want to acknowledge that. But no, I have not found him yet. So if anybody's out there that's more than adequate and tall, please call Joan.
Right. No, I said I called this one finale, the one I'm married to. I had enough.
That's Wait, it. How many have you had, though?
No, one is enough.
Oh, well, I've only had one, and I think it's time for another.
Okay, well, hot pants and all. Now, these kids probably don't even know about the casting couch.
Oh, fortunately, I didn't have to deal with that.
Do you guys know about that? No, they're shaking their heads. But in the days when Susan Silver, who was one of the original writers, by the way, the Mary Tyler Moore Show, the Bob Newhart Show, Maude, all the other hot sitcoms, to get a job occasionally as an actor.
As an actor.
You had to be willing to deal with the casting couch.
Correct. And you wanted. Fortunately, writers, they nobody seemed interested. In fact, I just talked to Ed Asner last week because I asked him to do a blurb for my book, and I said, I don't know if you remember. He said, I remember. I thought you can't be a writer because writers are short guys with glasses and cigars.
Right.
And he thought I was they thought I was a secretary. And you were either a secretary or an actress or a slash waitress, you know.
Right.
So no, fortunately, writers were not. Well, at least I wasn't subjected to the casting couch. I was married then. Maybe that's why.
Right. Wouldn't stop these guys. But the thing is that these glamorous young women had to be willing to have sex with these guys to get a job. Listen, nothing's changed. Look what went on at Fox.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean? Oh, right, with Roger Ailes, God, yes.
I mean, he had his own kind of casting couch.
And I have to tell you a Roger Ailes story if you have a second.
Go ahead.
I did the casting for Laugh-In, and at the time, for those
one of the great shows.
Yeah. Richard Nixon was running, and he was so not likable that Roger Ailes worked a deal with our producer, Paul Keyes, to bring him on the show, and he said the catchword was sock it to me, and he was supposed to say sock it to me, and it took him six takes, but even back then, Roger Ailes was in there trying to control our politics through the media. It's kind of scary.
And unfortunately, he was very good at it.
Yeah.
Roger Ailes.
We were blamed for it. I think we were blamed. We got the credit and the blame for Nixon.
Right. And Roger Ailes, you know, I'm sure played a large role, too, in what's been going on currently. But Roger Ailes may have had problems with his own casting couch, but he was brilliant and still is at what he does.
Well, yes, if you want to believe the big lie and take us into that direction, he's the one.
Right. Well, you know, he's the original soundbite king.
Was that his forte?
Well, he sort of all these millions of people watched television, grew up only listening to sound bites, you know. Quick, get to the point, three lines, and that's it. Anyway, so you've had a lot of adventures. Was Mary Tyler Moore very opinionated? Was she fun to work with?
She was lovely. If she had strong opinions that were counter to anything, I never heard them. She was kind. She was a very private person. And she basically, whatever we wrote, I never had a problem with her saying, let's change this or something. As writers, never were, but we were invited to the table when they read the scripts. And if we had a suggestion, they took it. It was a very friendly, writer-friendly organization and the best place I ever worked, I'll tell you.
Uh-huh. With some of the great talent.
It was wonderful, and they were all wonderful, and it was a fun place to be, and you wanted to hang out there. You know, other places you kind of wanted to go home and write your script and not see them again.
Well, I thank you so much for your time, Susan. Good luck to you, and I hope that Mr. Wright, or good enough Wright.
Mr. More Than Adequate appears, right?
More Than Adequate. I hope that he appears on your doorstep.
Joan, turn you on to me, right. Thank you so much, Joan.
Take care of yourself. Thanks for sharing Mary with us. I'm Joan Hamburg. This is WABC.